G'day, this is Big Brady Marshall.
This is Brian Alvarez.
This is Dean Brady of the Millennials.
This is the Jurassic Punk Sid Parker.
How many of you guys have heard the term kayfabe?
Blue Doggers. This is Jay Hunter from OSW Review.
This is Matt Grim Basso.
This is the loosest kid in Australian wrestling, Adam Brooks.
This is Scrap Brand Adam Pearce, and you are locked in
to Wrestle Radio Australia.
Welcome, everyone, to what for 5 years now has been your longest running Australian wrestling podcast, Wrestle Radio Australia. I'm your host, Todd Eastman. Hope you've had a good week. I have been flat out as you could possibly be. Wow. If I sound really tired, it's because brother's got to work. Brother's got to work to earn a living around here. And your old mate Todd has been doing ungodly shifts at his other occupation, which meant not much time to get out and do the old podcast this week. So what I thought I would do is give you one from one of my favorite podcasts I've ever done. I think it's about 4 or 5 years old now, so that's how old it is, but still really, really good content, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But I just want to I'll do a quick views from the east sort of deal before we jump into the interview. And World Series Wrestling released their dates for next year, and Brisbane and Perth weren't in this year, this next tour, I guess you would call it. Yeah, of course you'd call it a tour. They aren't in, they aren't going to Brisbane or to Perth in this next year's tour, which is a bummer if you live up in Brisbane like I do, or if you live in Perth. But now, look, I know for Perth's sake, the local wrestling scene over there is strong. It is very, very strong. So for that, and I'm not too sure how the ticket sales went for that. I think there was still a couple of seats left at the Perth show, so I'm not too sure what that is. But the Brisbane show, I know for a fact, because I've talked to a few people involved, and they didn't sell a hell of a lot ticket-wise for the first show. And I know all the wrestling smarks out there are going, oh, it was because of the ring thing, and that's why he won't come back, and Austin Aries says he doesn't want to go there, so that's what's going... None of that is the case, to be perfectly honest with you. It was not a strong ticket sales for that event, and also venues up here in Queensland charge an absolute arm and a leg to put a show on, which really doesn't help people when they want to start out. And also, and I hate to do this because you guys listen to the show, it's got a lot to do with the wrestling fans in Queensland, to be perfectly honest with you, not going out and supporting the local product. Get out there and support the local product, guys. If you go out there and these guys in World Series Wrestling see that Venom Pro Wrestling, Australian Wrestling Alliance, UPW, Ultimate Pro Wrestling League, all sell out their shows, packed crowds, hot territory. Of course they're going to come up to Brisbane and give it another crack. Of course they are, because they say, look at how many wrestling fans are up in Queensland. Look how many people are attending local shows. Get out there and support the local product. You want to see the internationals come up? Support the local product so these big companies like World Series Wrestling will look at that and go, oh shit, look how many people are going out to their local shows. We can bring all these guys in. This show will sell out. So you can blame all the things you want, but at the end of the day, it was poor ticket sales and venue cost, which is why World Series Wrestling aren't coming up to Queensland anytime soon, unfortunately. And I wish it was so. I wish they were coming up this year, to be perfectly honest with you. Not only for the fact that they put on great shows, but my friends are on those shows. I'd love to see my friends more often. But that is the case. And I'm putting it on you guys, the Queensland wrestling fans. Get out and support your local shows. Get out, support your local shows. So bigger shows will see this and go, that's somewhere where we need to be. Anyway, let's move on. That's a quick little views from the east sort of deal. Let's move on to the interview for this week. And it is a flashback interview, like I said at the start of the show. It is me talking to Scrap Iron Adam Pearce. Now, this is my favorite possible interview I've done, because I suppose it was the biggest one I'd done at the time. But the guy I learnt so much from this guy, Adam Pearce. Not just from this interview, but getting to know him outside of doing this interview. Just the wrestling mind that he has. And you'll see it in this interview. You'll see that we do talk about a lot of that stuff. We talk about a lot of him when he booked ROH. He actually booked the angle with El Generico and Kevin Steen. And if you're a wrestling fan and you saw that angle in ROH, you'll know how good... You know how good that was. So we cover all that stuff. Remember again, this is probably 4 or 5 years old, so some of the stuff mightn't be exactly up to date, but the content and the stuff he actually talks about hold up to this day. And like I said, one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, and we will get to that right here now on Wrestle Radio Australia.
Ladies and gentlemen,
joined here today by Adam Pearce, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, former 5-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Thanks very much for joining us, mate.
I appreciate you guys having me.
First off, how did you get into wrestling? What sort of attracted you to the business?
That question intimates that I was ever attracted to wrestling to begin with.
That's true.
Because I really wasn't. And that's the funny story. I mean, I've told it a million times, and I don't mind sharing it with you. I never had aspirations to get into pro wrestling. I played American football.
Wasn't something you watched as a kid or
anything? Well, I mean, I watched it casually, like a lot of kids did. You know, growing up in the late 70s, early 80s in Chicago, it was an AWA town. So Hulk Hogan at that point was still there, Nick Bockwinkel, Bobby Heenan, that kind of stuff. I watched as a kid, but it never crossed my mind to ever even think that I would get into wrestling. I was going to play American football in college and then, you know, see what happened after that. When I was between my junior and senior seasons in high school, I was diagnosed with what's called muscular compartment syndrome. And for the layman out there, and I'm not a doctor, but basically what it is, your calves are four muscle groups surrounded by one membrane. When the muscles themselves grow, but the membrane surrounding them doesn't, the muscle fibers die.
Oh,
and they implode. Yeah, so if it's not treated, if it's an acute case like mine was, I mean, you could talk about amputation happening real quick.
Wow.
I went in on a Thursday afternoon and was diagnosed, and on Monday I was in surgery. And that kind of zapped all of my football aspirations. Not because of anything physical long term that was going to stop me from doing anything, but I was 17 years old, man. It was like a mental kick in the gut, you know what I mean? Because I've been talking to a number of Division I college football squads.
Wow.
And now I was sunk into a deep depression and went from about 285 pounds to 210. Wasn't going to play offensive tackle anymore. And that's when I discovered independent wrestling. And that was... November of 95, long time ago now. Now, 19 years ago today, as a matter of fact, was my first day of training.
Well, there you go. Congratulations.
Today's what, November 2nd, right?
Yes.
19 years ago.
Wow.
Today.
you were originally trained by Sonny Rogers and Randy Richley. Mm-hmm. Randy Ritchie, sorry. Mm-hmm. But you're also the first trainee of Steel Domain.
I say that. Ace Steel would probably argue that because he never takes credit for training me.
Okay.
He always says, nah, Pearce was trained when he came here. Well, we polished him up, which I've always said he did a lot more for me than that.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it something like you'd already sort of been trained where you thought, I need to learn more, or did you just see them?
I think I was like any young kid. I'd been with the same camp for a couple of years, and then Ace, who is widely respected, Ace and Danny Dominion in Chicago were widely respected as up-and-coming guys and kind of movers and shakers in the scene and friends of mine at that point. And I wanted to get out and do more things. And I saw them as an avenue to be able to open some doors for me and teach me some things that I wasn't doing at that point.
Yeah.
Really allowed me to kind of spread my wings creatively and try things that my trainers weren't necessarily fans of.
Okay.
You know? So it was just, I think, a means to moving forward in my career. Yeah. And I give him a lot of credit for that. And he doesn't take it, the son of a bitch. But that's okay. I still give it to him.
Yeah. For the people at home that don't know, Steel Dominion's like produce guys like CM Punk and your Colt Cabanas and Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, so very good training school, really.
Yeah, I wish it was still around. Kind of a little, it's like a little fraternity, the guys that came through there. Punk, Cabana, myself, Ace Steel, obviously, Jay Bradley, who's with TNA. There's a bunch of guys that came through there.
Now, you're NWA World Heavyweight Champion. What was it like to hold the belt? We all know its history with the Briscoes and the Funks and the Rhodes.
Sure.
And did you have a lot of pressure on yourself to sort of try to live up to those guys, or did you just want to make your own way and sort of rebuild the NWA, so to speak?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both, to be frank. The first time I got the belt, it was never supposed to come to me. I was never supposed to be champion. It was supposed to be Bryan Danielson. And a week previous to him going on and winning the tournament for that championship after TNA and the NWA split in 2007. We were in New York working for Ring of Honor, and he had his orbital bone broken, and he detached his retina in a match against Takeshi Morishima.
Yeah.
And I was on the undercard of that event, too, and I knew, you know, there's no way Brian's going to be able to work. And I got a call the following Wednesday asking if I could be in Puerto Rico, which I cleared my schedule, and they bought the plane ticket, and I went. I just went assuming I would be putting over Brent Albright,
yeah,
who was going to face Brian in the finals, and when I got to the building, it was all switched.
Wow.
So I didn't really have a chance to kind of wrap my head around what was happening, because it was like in your face, and right now, and this is what we're doing, and off you go. I think that's a blessing for me, because I never really got to think about pressure. I didn't.
Yeah.
I never really ever think about pressure. You go out there and you work. It's no matter if it's wrestling or anything else. You go out there every night, do the best you can, and someone else will write your legacy for you.
That's
you
know? Right.
But if you work hard and you treat people right,
you do the best you can.
You're in respect.
Yeah, exactly. Seven Levels of Hate DVD you've got out now. It's a series against Colt Cabana. Was that, say, the best of your career, you'd say, or...?
Oh, I don't know if I would say that. I think if I said that, it'd be disrespectful to a bunch of other guys that I've worked with over the last two decades.
Yep.
But certainly from conceptualizing it on paper to putting it together logistically, and then I'm going out there and, of course, you know, having the performances and then all of the drama that kind of happened in the middle of all of that with Cabana, it's certainly one of the most memorable things that I've been able to do. And that's why we made the movie. You know, I wanted to document everything because I thought it was a compelling wrestling story. One... But second of all, when everything went batshit crazy in the middle of it and really was interrupting real life situations for myself and Cabana, I thought it was a little bit more compelling than the run-of-the-mill wrestling story. And so lucky enough to have all the footage and whatnot, and the people that I worked with putting the thing together from the beginning anyway were gracious and coming on camera. So it's been a kind of a labor of love, and now that it's done... like another level of hate, if you will. Because I did everything on this damn project, from the filming, the editing, the packaging, shipping. I wanted my hands on all of it, and it was a pain in the ass. But it's done.
Moving forward to now being on Gut Check for TNA, and that you originally offered the Joey Ryan role.
Yeah, way back when.
Way back when, and you sort of turned it down. And seeing what happened to Joey in TNA, and now with TNA possibly being... for sale.
Right.
Do you think that was a great decision for you on your part back in there, or?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Joey seemed to do okay with it and made himself some money and had a lot of TV exposure doing that.
Yeah.
I always had a problem with Gut Check as a concept, especially at that at the first juncture when they were doing random guy against TNA star, and then the TNA star was beating the guys coming in like 3 minutes. I didn't see a lot of upside for the guys coming in. Fortunate for me, I know everyone there and have either booked or wrestled with pretty much everyone in TNA, so I didn't have any problem saying, no, this is stupid.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think it made sense for me to do that.
Yeah.
Joey did okay with it. Second time around when I came by, people don't really know or understand this, but I wasn't there specifically for Gut Check. I was there to talk about possibly getting an agent's job at TNA.
Oh, yeah.
And just as a byproduct of knowing Magno, the guy I ended up wrestling in the Gut Check and having worked with him in the past, it was said, hey, do you want to do this as well and see what happens? I said this a million times, and I'll say it again. People are afraid to ask me the TNA question, and I laugh. Guys, it's not real.
Exactly.
It's not real. Yeah. We knew what the hell we were doing when we got to the building.
That's right. Do you think it was a bit of a bad move not to have you, say, go into that ring to the final part of the Gut Check, just for the mere fact that you cut an awesome promo?
It's funny that you bring that up, because as part of why I was there to begin with, I said to the television production, I said, you asked me to be here for a couple of different reasons, and I'm going to pipe up and give you my opinion.
Yeah.
Knowing how the match went, and I still to this day feel terrible for Magno, because I put that match together to showcase him. And I would feel a lot better about it had I been the one to mess up all his offense for him.
Yeah.
But when you slip and fall off the rope and whatnot, he just had an off night, a bad night. He's a great guy and a great wrestler, and I don't want that to get lost on people, because it's true. He had a bad night.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was nerves or the TV cameras or what they were talking to him about in terms of what future they wanted for him via going through Gut Check, but just turned out to be a really bad night. I said to them after the internet basically exploded and I got over in the segment, I said, look, you know, if the consensus is you're not going to hire him, he can't really talk to begin with unless he goes out there and talks in Spanish. If I'm not being considered for a talent role anyway, let me have the mic for the promo segment. At least you know it'll be usable. And then there's even more controversy when you shoot me down there.
Yeah.
And they mulled it over for about a week and decided they wanted to go with what was written, which I was fine with.
Yeah. I just thought it was dumb because it was one of the first times you've ever seen like two judges straight away go no, no. And so there was no...
Right. And I said this... I'm not going to name who I was sitting next to when this all happened, but it's someone who is in the Hall of Fame. And he looked at me and I said, you just wasted millions of dollars and a television segment that meant nothing now. And I said, on top of that, if I'm Magno, I'm offended because you buried him on national television.
In the middle of the ring and just went, yeah, exactly. You
know, it was almost like he got kicked in the balls twice in that experience. Out of everyone that should feel bad about that, I'm sure Magno feels the worst. And he should. You know, I think he was done a little bit of a disservice, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, you did seem to capitalize a fair bit with the whole August 1.
Why wouldn't I?
Turning it into a front, because there was talk all over the internet wrestling community that you were going to come back as an Aces and Eights person or as something like that.
Yeah, I remember forever I was hearing that.
And then when they had the bald guy the promos for that August 1, you came out with your own video just to sell your merch.
Absolutely.
Which I thought was brilliant. I loved it.
And TNA actually worked with me on that too. I want to give credit to TNA because obviously, like I said a couple minutes ago, I've so many friends that work there.
Yep.
So when my Twitter started going crazy with this August 1, I didn't even know what the hell it was. So I called my buddy who works in the office and go, what is this? And he kind of brought me up to speed on what the angle was going to be and whatnot. I said, I'm going to use this to try and peddle my wares, if you will. And then about a week later, when they, because it took about 2 weeks or so for them to reveal it or whatever, by the time I started blurbing crap online, it was probably another couple of weeks before it actually was revealed. Yeah. They called me and said, hey, can we include you? Because they were putting stories on the TNA website. Can we have your consent to put your likeness on the website and use you as a potential suspect? And I was like, thank you. Yeah. Absolutely, you can.
Help me sell more.
Yes,
thank you
please,
very much.
Please, please. Yeah. Yeah, no, it worked out. You know, and I don't know, I have no idea because I don't watch it very often, but I don't know what the status of that is or if Tito's even there.
No,
or
it died. Because I think, Bellator pulled them in case they got injured, which invariably happened anyway. Tito got injured in training. So let me ask
you a question.
Yeah.
Let's say we're not even wrestling people. We're just normal people and we run a business. And we're going to invest money in bringing in a potential star for a role. Okay. And obviously, you would think this was discussed with everyone's corporate sponsors and management and all that.
Yes.
And then at the 11th hour, after everything's been greenlit and you've been promoting something on national television for a month or so, they just decide to say, now we're not going to do it. More wasted money. And then people wonder why the company's in the position it is. Yeah. And again, I have nothing but friends at TNA. But you've got to kind of question the decisions at the highest level.
Yeah, you have to question it when they do stuff like they hire King Mo, and they've had him on the books for, I couldn't tell you how long.
Great guy.
Yeah.
He's a great guy, by the way.
But just, you know what I mean, hasn't done anything in TNA, hasn't even been heard of in TNA.
Yeah.
You'd think in between training or something, they could have him come in and do something like that.
Yeah.
And then now Tito and Rampage. And Rampage, when Rampage first signed on, he didn't even want to wrestle.
No. Why would he?
Why the hell would you use it when you could use that and use those resources somewhere else?
You know, you wonder, and again, I'm not privy to that information, but you wonder who it is actually making the decisions. Is it Viacom? Is it Spike? Is it a combination of the two?
Well, they do pay half the contracts of some of the guys, don't they?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
I heard that they help with Kurt Angle's, and they help with Sting's, and they help with Hogan's.
I have no idea.
So
I really don't. But, I mean, it makes you wonder.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm writing the check.
It also makes you wonder, too, when now that apparently they're up for sale, Viacom isn't one of the people that are talking about buying it. So you've got to think that they know maybe a lot more about their finances than what other people do.
Or maybe it's all horseshit to begin with.
There's another point.
You never know.
Very good. Now, the WWE have opened up that performance center to try. Do you, what effect do you think of the long term it might have on independent wrestling as a whole now, where people don't really have to try that? They can just try and get straight into the performance center and sort of bypass all that stuff.
I kind of think it depends on what kind of talent they get coming out of there. You know, if they start turning out people who are credible and they put them on television and those people catch on, then maybe they have something. But I don't know. I don't know anyone that's come out of there yet. I mean, it's brand new too.
Yeah,
I mean,
is,
to
yeah,
be fair, it's going to take some time to get the thing established.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Well, it's interesting. Mm. I don't think that the Performance Center. Jesus, there's a huge cockroach. A giant fucking cockroach. Can I say that?
Yeah, go
just
for it.
Crawled and it's like chilling on the wall
wow.
behind us.
You saw me look and I was like.
Yeah, I was like, I thought it was like a hot chick or something. No, giant cockroach. Yeah, I totally lost my train of thought on that one.
Yeah, developmental center.
Yeah, who knows what it's. I mean, who knows? It's brand new, you know. I don't think that Performance Center necessarily will replicate or replace experience in other areas.
Yep.
I think at the end of the day, you still want well-rounded performers. And without being there and seeing exactly what they have going on, I don't know how well-rounded the guys are going to be coming out of there.
Yeah.
If that's the only place and the only people they're working with.
Yeah, that's the only problem I have with it, really, is it will just produce that one type of wrestler, where for me it'll seem like every wrestler's a creator wrestler, just with a different face. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hope not.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to be fair, now there are a lot of the guys that came from the independents that are in developmental now in Florida. I know a vast majority of them, and there's some varied body types and some varied performers.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I think it's too soon to judge that, frankly.
Okay, now moving into a different area of the business and booking.
Yep.
And you booked for ROH.
Yep.
Correct. Now you took over in a fairly pivotal time in their history. How hard was that, especially when it was your first sort of foray into booking?
I don't think putting wrestling stories together necessarily was difficult. Having been doing this shit for ever, that's almost second nature, I think, to me. The part of that job that I wasn't necessarily prepared for was babysitting the personalities of the guys. And the personalities that you deal with when you're wrestling guys or on the road or in the bar or in the hotel or on the planes is very different when it comes talking to dollars and cents in their paychecks.
Yeah.
And during that period of time in Ring of Honor, you know, a couple years previous to the sale to Sinclair, I don't think it's any secret that we were struggling financially. And a lot of the responsibilities that I was having in terms of talent relations really revolved around that. And that took up a lot of time away from the wrestling side of things, which can really, in Ring of Honor, the wrestling side of things kind of run themselves.
They take care of themselves, yeah.
Very, I mean, obviously, there's some great guys that I've known forever. You know, I never had an issue ever with a talent and their booking, never.
Yeah.
It was always kind of the business side of things.
Was it hard? Because I've always wondered this about ROH. Is it hard booking long-term with those guys when you know that they could sign a developmental contract or something like that?
No, because we had guys under contract.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I had 25 guys under contract. So I was talking to a couple of people yesterday. I would lay out 6 months at a time.
Okay.
And say, here's what you got for 6 months. And then, again, if they had something come up where they were going to be in Japan for an extended period or they wanted to try TNA or WWE, they would have to take that up with the management side of Ring of Honor.
Just handball and that then, over?
Yeah, well, I mean, no, it wasn't that necessarily, but like that was above my pay grade.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't against policy necessarily for Kerry Silkin, who owned the company, to say, go ahead and go do your WWE tryout, because he understood long term, if you want to make money in the wrestling business, there's really only a couple of places in the world to do that.
Exactly.
So he was never going to stand in the way of allowing people to kind of chase that brass ring, especially knowing that financially we were always kind of on hard times anyway. So when that did happen, I had plenty of notice and whatnot, and it was easy to kind of scramble and fix things. It was never really an issue.
So what was your favorite storyline that you produced, and so what did you enjoy about it?
God.
For me, I think it was Steam and Generico.
Generico. All right, I'll take that one. Yeah, I thought that was perfect. And
yeah.
Nothing's perfect. You know, I mean, knock on wood, those guys are going to, hopefully both of them, make a bunch of money in the business. It's a pleasure working with people who see the big picture. And I think the part of that storyline that doesn't get nearly the credit that it deserves is Colt Cabana and Steve Corino as a supporting acts.
Yeah.
On either side of Steam and Generico. They were pivotal.
Especially when you've got Generico who doesn't really cut.
Didn't talk at all.
Nah.
Didn't talk at all. And those guys were just eager, and we were throwing ideas at each other, and let's, what about this, what about that, you know. And there were people in the company at the time, who will remain nameless, who I actually respect a great deal and consider a mentor, who saw nothing in any of those four guys, and if he had his way, they wouldn't even have been working for Ring of Honor, which is crazy to even think about from my perspective.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of argue for this angle, which for my money was the hottest angle in the company for an entire calendar year.
Well, for me, Steen was almost the biggest anti-hero since Austin, when he came back with that whole kill Steen kill and all that stuff against Jim Cornette back in I think last year or the year before.
Both on screen and behind cameras.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'll say this: did that angle work? I'll let you answer this for me. I don't think the scum angle happens if that stuff doesn't happen. Nothing that Kevin's done in Ring of Honor in the last 2 or 3 years happens unless, if we don't complete that angle.
Exactly. Period. That's exactly right. Now, how do you think, bringing it back to Australia, how do you think the indie promotions over here compete or compare to the ones in the US or the ones, say, the UK?
I hate that question, and I'll tell you why. Because it's all the same.
Yep.
I don't think there's a whole lot of difference in independent wrestling, regardless of where you are.
Standard-wise or...
Well, I mean, okay, there's a lot of shit in the United States, too. And I feel like when I got this asked this question last week, and I felt like the guy was leading me into almost trying to prod me into shitting on Australian independence. And that doesn't make any fucking sense. Why would I do that, one? And two, I don't agree with that.
Yep.
I simply don't. I've wrestled in some really horrible places on this planet, okay? And I can tell you that the majority of those places were in the United States. Seriously, I have no reason to lie about that.
Yeah.
I've had nothing but good times with the people here in Australia, and I think there's plenty of talent and plenty of upside here. I think there needs to be, and this doesn't limit itself to Australia or the States or England. There's not enough veteran guys to lead the young guys.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of that last breaths of kayfabe, if you will, breaking in like 95. It was pretty well dead at that point, or on its way, but the guys that trained me were very much early 70s and earlier wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know, in particular, the notion today of calling an entire match backstage, I don't do it. I refuse to do it. And some guys will get mad at me. There's no spontaneity, there's no fun, and that's not working.
Yeah. I do remember back, this is a fair while ago, I can't remember what show it was on, but it was Hulk Hogan. They asked him if wrestling was scripted. He goes, well, if it was completely scripted, if somebody messed something up, wouldn't we just stand and look at each other in the middle of the ring?
And how many times has that happened now in independent wrestling?
Yeah.
I did a camp the last 2 days in Melbourne. It happened last night. I mean, put the guys in the ring. I gave them 5 minutes to work out a match.
Yep.
Okay? I don't need 5 minutes to work out a match. I just need to finish. And if the guy that's working with me trusts me, we'll have a passable match. I don't think I have bad matches. I don't mind saying that. But these guys were, it was a tag match, and it came time for the comeback, and somebody forgot what they had called, and they just stood there looking at each other. And so I stopped them, and I said, now what if a crowd was in here?
Yeah.
You've just told everyone in here that what we do is horse shit. They already think and know it's fake.
You've got to suspend that disbelief for...
That's our job. I feel like that's our job now, is to take people who know what we're doing is phony and flip the switch on them and make them question that.
Exactly. Even if it's for 1 minute or something, to go, oh, that would have really hurt.
Even
that
if it's one person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, totally agree.
I think that's the art form. To me, that's working. Calling a bunch of spots is not working. I can train a monkey to take bumps and do moonsaults. I can. To be able to draw a legitimate and real emotional response out of people that's organic and real, and in the now, that's a different art form, and that's the part of professional wrestling, I think, on all levels, that's being lost.
Mm. Do you think that promo work can be taught, or do you sort of have to just have that in you, that you can?
I think you can teach someone to hit bullet points and sell a product. You can teach anyone to be a salesman. Yep. I think, but the really good salesmen don't need to be taught, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I hate fully scripted promos. Absolutely hate them.
It feels wooden. It feels laconic. There's nothing, to me, credible. I mean, I guarantee it, just having conversations with these people, if you went and I was at Ring of Honor when we had Ric Flair, I was responsible for handing him his promos. Now, how ridiculous is that, number one?
Okay. You just give him a bullet point.
That's exactly it. I would just, and that's what I did. I put on the piece of paper the date, the building. This is the match.
You've been doing this since 72.
Please.
I think you know how to do it. Yeah.
And he was like, thank God you're not handing me 2.5 paragraphs. Because he wouldn't do it. Piper wouldn't do it.
No.
Would they have to? No. Why, who am I working? What's the match? Why?
Yeah.
Go.
Exactly right.
But that said, that's I mean, it sounds really easy saying that right now, but when the light's on and you're in front of people, it's a very different animal, man. It really is. Yeah. And either some people are very comfortable in public speaking situations, but the majority of people are not.
And I must admit, for me, it took me about 1 or 2 shows just to sort of get more comfortable, right, just to relax in front of people. And it's a bit different for me because I'm out there for 3 hours.
Yeah,
so I suppose for guys that are cutting promos and that, they may be out there for a minute or 2 minutes to cut their promo.
Right.
But for me, I sort of like thrown out there. And it took a little while because I used to do MC work
in
nightclubs. And I was comfortable because I was hidden behind a big desk.
In the shroud of darkness.
Exactly right. You could say whatever you want because you couldn't tell if they were looking at you or not.
Right.
So, but and I thought, coming out here,
no problem.
Every week, I'm fine. Coming out here for the first, I think it was the first thing I cut, I sort of went,
Right. And then you find your legs and
exactly
here you go.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I do that when I teach seminars too, is I'll we'll start like an impromptu promo class right now and I just watch everybody freak out. That's the design of the drill.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily to get you to learn how to talk. It's to make you uncomfortable so that you can become comfortable.
Exactly.
Wrestling, talking, all of the things that we do in this business, you're never going to do it well until you're comfortable doing it, and you never get comfortable doing it, as we have an earthquake happening above us now. You never get comfortable doing it unless you actually do it.
Yeah.
That's my philosophy.
Okay, now, I'm just going to go into some questions that we sort of ask everybody that we interview, just like random sort of.
Sure.
Who are the favorite guys, some of the favorite guys you've worked, like here and abroad, guys that you see when you've got, we want you to come here and face this guy, I'm going to have a great match, I don't have to worry about a thing.
Here in Australia or in general?
Everywhere.
Is it wrestling or behind the scenes or all of the above?
All of the above.
Bruno Sammartino, awesome when we had him at Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
Amazing. I was in awe of him, just from a stature standpoint. Ric Flair's on that list too, and he's very black or white.
Yeah.
He wasn't well liked in Ring of Honor for a variety of reasons, but always treated me personally very well. So I'm grateful for that. Colt Cabana, CM Punk, you know, Samoa Joe, Chris Daniels. I could literally name a million guys. I mean, the guys that I came up with, Chris Daniels, like the godfather to the Chicago indie scene.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
So every time I see Uncle Daniels, it's very cool.
Yeah,
Jerry Lynn. Jerry Lynn, one of my favorite human beings on earth.
Old Man Daniels or something.
I call him Uncle Daniels. Now, he's only got me by a couple of years now, so I can't call him Old Man because I'm right there with him, and neither one of us have hair. So, but I call him Uncle Daniels.
Okay, now, best promotions you've worked? Like, just ones that you know that you're going to, and it's going to be everything will be organized for you. Don't have to worry about time? Yeah.
Very easy. WWE, TNA, New Japan, Ring of Honor. It's very
None of the independents you've gone, or just any independents?
You know, it was early PWG was fun. You know, basically any promotion that I went to that I got paid, didn't have to worry about any bullshit, was always a positive experience for me. And that's why I lead off with those. I never had to worry about getting my paycheck from those various places.
Well, that leads me into my next one. In your opinion, what makes a good promotion? Like for a good for someone who wanted to start an indie, say.
God forbid. Why would anyone want to do that?
You never know.
Yeah.
What would you say to them? What would you say, this is what would be the ideal place for us?
Rule number one for me, if you're starting your own independent, spend somebody else's money. God, please don't spend your own money on wrestling. It's such a fruitless business. So many people come into wrestling with delusions, I think, of grandeur.
Yeah.
It's a very cutthroat and hard business to make a living at. And I consider myself to be one of the very few exceptions to the rule. I really haven't had any long-term national television exposure outside of a couple weeks on TNA TV here in the last year or so. To be able to do what I do, I consider myself very lucky, but almost cursed because now I have to do it. You know what I mean? Got to pay them bills. Like anything, to get back to your question, though, work hard. Treat people with respect. And again, I don't think that's limited to wrestling.
Yeah.
I think that's anything you do in life. I'm almost 36 years old now, right? And I think about the kind of shitbag I was as a teenager.
Yep.
You know, just a real piss-poor human being on a lot of fronts. And I think about the things that my parents instilled in me when I was a kid. My mom always said, it's not hard. Treat people the way you want to be treated. It's such a cliche, but it's so true. And now that I have kids,
yeah,
like, that's of paramount importance to me. And that's how I kind of approach all business. I'm going to treat you as I would want you to treat me. And then if you fuck with my family or my money, I'll cut your throat. It's that simple.
Fair enough. That's the one thing I did like about when I first joined here, is that everyone seems like family.
That's how it should feel, I think.
And it's the one place you like going. So right. last thing you want to do is have to go, I have to go to training.
Yeah, I don't want to do that, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was talking to the kids in my camp the last couple of days. We're all here because we share a common passion. We love professional wrestling for whatever reason. Don't lose that. Mm. And don't lose sight of the fact the guy or the girl next to you loves it exactly the same as you do. And the people that don't will eventually weed themselves out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the one thing that does annoy me, when you see guys that seem to have all the tools,
right,
and just don't want it. They're there, but they're like, just kick in and kick out.
No, I don't tend to judge unless it's becoming an issue. And there's a couple instances in the Ring of Honor with guys who, and it happens, you go through cycles of, you know, I want to do this, I don't want to do this, maybe there's an injury, maybe there's something going on at home that is starting to become an issue that makes you say, and I've gone through it myself, where it's time to go get on the plane, and I seriously just don't want to. You know, maybe my daughter cried that morning because she doesn't want daddy to go.
Yeah.
Anything. Fighting with my wife. You know, I got a pulled groin. There's any myriad of reasons for you not to want to do something or for you to be negative about something, but I think it's important to kind of find that other side of the coin.
Yeah.
And carry on, because that shit's contagious. Negativity is very contagious. And at the same time, positivity is as well.
Yeah.
I'd rather be in a room full of happy people than a room full of assholes.
Yeah. Well, Adam Pearce, that about wraps us up. Before we let you go, though, I want you to get all your plugs where people can follow you, where they can get the DVD, all your merch, because he's one of the few guys you've ever seen that's got merch of ladies' underwear.
Isn't that great?
It's unbelievable.
See, can I tell a story about that real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Because people think I'm insane, and maybe I am a little bit.
No, it all makes money.
Ryan Barkin, who owns 1 Hour Tees out of Chicago, which then made the ProWrestlingTees.com website, started printing. He was basically saying, I can print anything on anything. So guys were doing like bed sheets and pillowcases and, you know, hoodies and that kind of thing. And I just said, one off. You ever done panties? And he was silent on the phone for a minute. He goes, no, but let me send you a link. So he went on his wholesaler's website and found a bunch of cheap panties. And he goes, I don't see any reason why I can't print on these. And I go, give me a half hour, I'm going to find a design. I said, we might sell none, we might sell 10, we might sell 10,000. But I can't think of another wrestler who was selling women's panties.
No,
can you?
No.
That's the only reason I did it, so I could be the first.
But I think for a gimmick, if you've got a gimmick like Rhett Titus's old gimmick.
Or Joey Ryan.
Or Joey Ryan.
I said to Joey, why don't you have panties?
Why doesn't he do that?
You know what he said to me? You already did it. I go, well, you're an idiot. You'll probably sell 100 times more panties than I ever will.
Yeah. If he had, like, legalized sleeves on his panties.
On his panties. Or put his face, like, right in the crotch.
That is an image.
I want a cut of his sales if he does that.
That's probably why I won't do it now.
Mm-hmm. Because I'll collect.
Yeah. All right, so where can they get a hold of you?
Fuck. If you want to get a hold of me. Twitter's easy. It's at @ScrapDaddyAP. Facebook, I don't... off the top of my head, know the URL or the
just address. Search Adam Pearce.
Find me. I'm there. Whatever. ProWrestlingTees.com/Adam Pearce. Buy everything there, please. It helps me feed my giant children.
Pro Wrestling Tees is actually a really good website if you like wrestling t-shirts, especially if you want to support the indie guys, because a lot of the money goes straight to those guys. It's not going to the company.
It's a great deal for everybody. And in fact, I mean, for the people of Australia, wrestlers that might be listening to this, look into it. It's really, it doesn't cost you a dime.
No.
It really
doesn't. I actually suggested that to one of the guys here today.
Yeah.
Because he was thinking about it. And I said, why don't you just use the same stuff that those guys use?
It was a great concept. That's why I was like one of the first. I said, let's do this.
Yeah.
You mean you're going to print everything, you're going to house everything, you're going to ship everything, you're going to handle all the financial transactions, and all I have to do is get a check every month? Sold.
Especially after you have to deal with a DVD. Everything was
involved. Oh, yeah, especially now.
And you would have seen what Cabana went through with all of his stuff.
Oh, God.
I don't know how he does it, because I've got one of those, the workman shirts.
Yeah.
And being in Australia, I wasn't sure about the whole shipping and all that, so I emailed him. And sure enough, it was him that emailed me back.
Sure.
Like 3 hours later.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, dude must never sleep.
He's very much, he was an inspiration in a lot of ways for me to do the movie and everything about the movie myself.
Yeah.
Because of how he handles all of his business. Yeah. And he just as you said, does it all himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, Road Diaries, he didn't cut. Somebody else cut it, but like, you know, he can't talk shit to me about my movie. I did literally everything on my movie.
Yeah.
He just paid somebody to do it up for his. But yeah. He's a hustler, man. No doubt. No doubt.
All right, well, Scrap Iron, it's been awesome to talk to you, mate. Can't thank you enough, and I cannot wait to see you work tonight.
Well, hopefully everyone else feels the same way. I just want a beer after I'm done.
Right, I think
if you can hear me out there in Australian land, give me beer.
Actually, we were told that before you got here.
You were told? Who told you that?
I think it was whoever is in charge of Warzone.
Ah.
As long as you have beer, he'll be happy.
Yeah, that's it. It's very simple pleasures in life, my brothers. Just, you know, give me a cold one and let me chill for a minute.
Right.
Give me something easy on the eyes to look at and a beer in my hand and I'm good to go.
I'm sorry, we need Josh.
Well. Yeah,
any kind of hair kind of still looks disgusting, doesn't it?
His hair?
Well, the whole feature. The whole, really.
Listen.
Plus the voice and I have to commentate tonight, so that's going to be fun.
We can only work with what we're given by the good Lord, my friends.
Mm-hmm. He really rip you off armor. Anyway, sir, thank you very much for joining me.
Take care. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
People say having an opinion is like having a penis. It's really great for you, but you shouldn't share it around. That's exactly what we don't do. We share it all about the internet. And in fact, we advertise it on other people's podcasts so that they can go and enjoy it as well. Am I talking about penises or am I talking about opinions on film? To find out, you'll have to go to our website, secondtakepodcast.com, or find Second Take Podcast on your podcatcher of choice.
It's now time to find out where the action is around the country. And on Saturday in Victoria, PCW Christmas Chaos, Lucas Daniels versus Marcus Cage in a 60-minute Ironman match. That is at the Southeastern Entertainment Centre in Ferntree Gully. Tickets are at pcw.com.au. Get out there and support PCW. Or you can go to Adrenaline Pro Wrestling Legacy at the Cranbourne Indoor Sports Centre. Adam Brooks versus Zane Zodiac. Slade Mercer versus Jason Crash. Message the Adrenaline Pro Facebook page to reserve your tickets. I am flying through this, I apologise. In New South Wales on Saturday night, Hunter Valley Wrestling have Ready to Rumble at Club Maitland City. Alex Titan versus JXT for the HVW title. And also a 30-man Rumble if you're a fan of Royal Rumbles. Get out there to that one. Tickets for that one are at moshtix.com.au. And on Sunday in New South Wales, Wrestling Go Iron Man at the Marion Community Centre. Doors for that one are at 3:30 in the afternoon. Normally I don't say that because normally they're sort of a standard 6:30, 7:30 at night. Wrestling Go on the Sunday afternoon. Doors are at 3:30 in the afternoon for that one. And your tickets are $15. Main event for that one, Matty Wahlberg versus Ricky South in a 30-minute Iron Man match. That will be a great match. Also on this card, Adam Brooks, Treehugger Lucci, Jax Jordan, Velocities, SMS, Kai Drake, B-Boy, Big Fudge, just to name a few. Get out there Sunday afternoon, 3:30 doors are. Tickets are at eventbrite.com.au. In WA, Schwa, Ascension 10 at the Don Russell Performing Arts Centre. Main event for that one, Craven versus the Don Michael Morleone for the Schwa title. Tickets for that one are at schwawrestling.com.au. Also, there's a 5-man ladder match on that show. The biggest show of the year for Schwa, so get out there and support them if you're in WA this weekend. And to wrap it up, in Queensland, Venom Pro Wrestling present Flatline at the Showman's Guild at Yatla. Main event for that one, Tim Cade versus Flashman for the VPW title. Also, Impact Wrestling's Gesinder Singh is in action against Rip Riley. My boy Jake Nova will be in the ring against Sam Osborne. That should be a really good match. Message Venom Pro Wrestling on Facebook to book your tickets for that one. I shall be there, of course, with Jake Nova. Any promotions that want their show mentioned here on Where the Action Is, hit us up on Facebook or email me at WrestleRadioAustraliaTodd@gmail.com, and we'll mention you on an upcoming episode, or book me and I'll definitely mention it, because that's kind of what I do. And that is Where the Action Is this weekend. Do you want free stuff? Yeah, of course you do. The guys at Electro Cowboy are holding a competition to give you a free t-shirt. Now, Electro Cowboy is the brainchild of two Melbourne guys just wanting a better shirt. They've got some pretty awesome designs and a shirt that feels damn great too. If you're anything like me, I go out there and 95% of my wardrobe are basketball jerseys, baseball jerseys, or wrestling t-shirts. And a lot of times if I want to go out to dinner with my my better half, she's kind of like, can you not wear a wrestling t-shirt for once? Or can you not wear it? We're not going out to a pub. Can you not wear a jersey? So luckily, Electric Cowboy really sorted me out there, because they have some great designs on there. So what do you have to do to get into this competition? Go to electrocowboy.com, get yourself an Electro Cowboy t-shirt, and throw up a selfie wearing the shirt on Instagram, tag at electro_cowboy, and use the hashtags electrocowboy and shirtgamestrong by 11:59 on New Year's Eve, and you'll enter the competition to win that bad boy. So get on it, head over to electrocowboy.com, and get some great t-shirts. They do really have some awesome designs. There's a couple there. Just to take you behind the curtain a little bit, one of the guys that is behind Electric Cowboy is a former worker or a worker. Great dude, and really cool designs. Actually, when I first saw it, I messaged him and said to him, dude, there's some sick shirts, man. He's like, say, as you do. I even sent him, if you want a spot on the show, let me know. I'll definitely want to promote you, because just like promoting Australian wrestling, we like promoting everything Australian, and Electric Cowboy are an Australian product. So get on it, head on over to electrocowboy.com and get something great for free. Alright guys, that does it for this week here in Wrestle Radio Australia. Again, apologize for being a flashback episode, but if you listen to the interview, you would probably agree with me, well worth another listen. Of course, it is fairly old, so you mightn't have even heard it before. So if you heard it for the first time, I hope you enjoyed it. If you're hearing it again and you enjoyed it again, thanks, I guess. If you haven't already, though, make sure you subscribe to WRA. It's free, and you can do it on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere you get your podcast from. If you do stop by iTunes, give us a rating and review while you're there. Give us a 5-star. Helps us get inside more ears. Share the show and spread the word. Also, make sure you like us on Facebook at Wrestle Radio Australia, and on Twitter at Wrestle Radio AU, and also on Instagram at Wrestle Radio AU, or me personally at Beast Eastman. We do have our Redbubble t-shirts, of course, up on redbubble.com, Wrestle Radio Australia shirts. Of course, any profits we make from that are going to Beyond Blue and Gotcha for Life, which support men's health issues, because that is something we are big on here in WRA. Hopefully next week we'll have some interviews for you, because I will be actually out working at Venom Pro Wrestling, and if you're out there, I hope to see you. I hope that you don't boo me too much. Yeah, do I hope you boo me a lot? It's kind of what I do. But yeah, hopefully I'll be able to get some interviews for that for the show upcoming. What can I say? It's around Christmas time, and in my line of work that isn't wrestling, it is an absolute madhouse, and that is why, to be perfectly honest with you, there was no interview this week, because I've been doing. So I did 60 hours work last week, and heading up on about that again this week. So good times for Toddy. That does it for this episode of Wrestle Radio AU. Wrestle Radio Australia. Jeez, can you tell how punch drunk I am? Until next week, I'm Todd Eastman, and we'll catch you then.